When an individual is convicted of a crime and sentenced to prison, what happens next? Lock them up and throw away the key? What about the children left at home? What does the future hold for them in terms of an education, employment, and ultimately a life on the straight and narrow? I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. My guest this hour is actively involved in a program specifically geared toward helping these children pay for an education. It's called the Creative Corrections Education Foundation, a program already underway in Wisconsin. We welcome your questions and comments this hour at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, and you can reach us on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. My guest this hour is Stan Stojkovic. He's dean of the School of Social Welfare at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and a board member with the Creative Corrections Education Foundation. Stan, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we've had you on the program many times before, and then we found out that you were involved in this program, courtesy of a New York Times opinion piece that you wrote a couple of weeks ago. Could you give us a little bit of a 101 course on what the Creative Corrections Education Foundation is?
Basically, it's a foundation that started by a former warden, Percy Pitzer. Mr. Pitzer is a former resident of Wisconsin, but he was also a former employee, or is a former employee, of the Federal Bureau of Prisons. So he was involved in corrections for well over 30 years of his professional career. He retired as a warden a number of years ago and decided to create this foundation, the Creative Corrections Education Foundation, as an opportunity for inmates and their children in particular to get college education. He has a number of other initiatives, but this is the one that really sits at the forefront of the foundation. He had seen it on both sides. You know, he's seen prisoners come and go. He's seen their children come and go inside of institutions. And he made a personal commitment of $150,000, he and his wife, to start this foundation and to ultimately get inmates involved in a program that would assist their children across the country. And so he got a hold of me about 18 months ago, maybe a year ago, to see if I would be interested in joining the board and participate in the program. And I said yes. And we've just started to really take off across the country. So it's a very exciting initiative.
Hmm. What inspired you to do it? Why did you feel the need to help out?
Well, he had contacted me through a mutual friend who was a former employee in the Wisconsin Department of Corrections. That friend had sent me a piece that Mr. Pitzer had written and the American Bar Association Journal about the incarceration strategy of not only the federal government, but the 50 states as well. And I read the piece, and I was really moved by his level of analysis and his level of understanding. Yeah, granted, this individual has spent his entire professional career in corrections. And then he and I met, and we talked more, and then he asked me to be on the board, and I agreed to be on the board. The board is a nascent, developing board, and we decided to go forward together and to try to pitch this here in Milwaukee, and we made an initial pitch, and it seems to be moving very nicely going forward.
So describe how it works.
What happens is an individual, let's say a young man or woman, there's no age limitation, will submit to the Creative Corrections Education Foundation an application for a request for a scholarship. That scholarship then is reviewed by Mr. Pitzer and his group at the Creative Corrections Education Foundation. And they, if they're interested, they'll contact that person. Now, that person has to write an essay as to why they think they're deserving of a scholarship. Mm-hmm. We then do all the background checks, the foundation does. The background checks finds out something about this person. Then we call them and we interview them. Now, I have not done any of those interviews. Mr. Pitzer handles every interview himself. And in the last year, he's granted 41 $1,000 scholarships to what he deems to be deserving students of former prisoners or even current prisoners, or those are on some kind of supervision coming out of an institution. So once that's accepted, there is no change of money. And all this money is donated money by prisoners across the country, and or private donations. The money is ultimately sent to the university's bursar's office or the financial aid office, and then it's a credit given to the individual's account. So there is no physical exchange of money between the foundation and the recipient. And so that's the basic process. Percy will tell you that you read some of these letters and essays that he gets, and it draws you to tears. They're so heartfelt, and we want to be involved in that. We thought that this is a classic progressive Wisconsin idea moving forward, and we should be involved.
How many children in the U.S. do have a parent who has been involved in the correctional system or currently is involved?
Well, the numbers are pretty staggering. Depending upon how you define that variable, could be anywhere from 2 to 7 million children. And if you broaden that to include people who are on other types of correctional supervision, like probation, for example, you're now talking about millions of students, potential students, millions of children of those who are incarcerated. And, you know, they need an opportunity just like anyone else. So this is our small way to initiate that opportunity and give them that opportunity.
So as I mentioned, you had written about this foundation in the New York Times, and you kind of describe a walk through one of the prisons. I believe it was the Milwaukee County House of Corrections. Is that right?
Yeah, the Milwaukee County House of Correction with the superintendent, Mike Haseman, over there. We approached him to see if he would be interested in doing an initial pilot here in Wisconsin. Simultaneously, Percy Pitzer is traveling across the country, sort of a Johnny Appleseed approach to this, approaching his former colleagues in the correctional system, asking them to make personal pitches to the prisoners to donate to this fund. And he's been very, very successful in doing that right now. So we started it here in Milwaukee at the House of Correction, and we're hoping to build it as we go forward.
How exactly did the prisoners themselves get involved in the program? Was there initial buy-in, or did it take some convincing? Because I imagine that money is not easy to come by in prison, and so to earn that money and then give it away, it might take some convincing. Is that true?
It's actually interesting. I mean, I went with Percy Pitzer when he went to the Milwaukee County House of Correction. His strategy is the following. He goes to an institution, he talks to an institutional superintendent or a warden, he asks to speak to the inmates. So in the case of the Milwaukee County House of Correction, Superintendent Haseman allowed him to come in and make a pitch or a plea to the prisoners directly. And he goes right in the housing unit and he says, he tells them, my name is Percy Pitzer, I'm a former warden in the Federal Bureau of Prisons, I'm here to talk to you about your children. And he gives about a 10-15 minute speech about who they are, who this is directed toward, what they're trying to accomplish, and ultimately you get inmates volunteering the money. And, you know, we're not talking large sums of money. Excuse me. We're talking about individuals who give 30 cents, 25 cents, a dollar. Percy Pitzer's pitch is the following. He says to them, at the cost of a candy bar a month, would you be willing to donate that cost of that candy bar to this fund to help a child who's interested in going to college, whose parent is either incarcerated or has been incarcerated? And it's a very moving pitch. You should see the reaction by the inmates. Very, very positive. He has been very successful, not only here in Milwaukee, but in Ohio, the states of Texas, the states of New Mexico. He's actually done some very, very interesting, but again, it's only the beginning. But it's not as difficult as you might think.
Well, and in Milwaukee, I understand prisoners aren't paid for the standard chores that they do. So how do they earn their money?
Most of that money is put into an inmate commissary account that's controlled by the institution, typically donated by their family. Some may work, but the amount of money that they make may be equivalent to $1 or $2 a day. In the state of Wisconsin, we can compel people to work. If they choose not to work, we can actually hold disciplinary credits against them. And as a result, these are people who have very austere means, but are very much convinced by Mr. Pitzer's pitch. Many ask things like, can you help my child specifically? How do I get involved once I get released from the institution? Now, are there some inmates who say, listen, I'm not going to be involved? Well, absolutely. But, you know, we estimate that if 25% of the prisoners who are in jails and prisons in this country today were to give a dollar a month, we could fund just about every child to go to college of a formerly incarcerated or currently incarcerated person. And so that's a very appealing pitch, and it's one in which they see themselves helping their own, helping individual, their children, which when they say, you know, inmates don't care about their children, yes, they do. They care a lot about their children, just like any parent. And as a result, it's an opportunity for them to give back. These are people who are on the wrong side of the law, ultimately now are saying, I want to contribute back to those children. It may not affect my child directly, but it will affect someone who's in a similar situation. So it's been a very positive reception thus far.
We're talking with Stan Stojkovich. He's dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at the UW-Milwaukee, and he's also a board member for the Creative Corrections Education Foundation. We're taking your questions and comments this hour as well. What do you think of programs like this? Would you donate to a program like this? Do you suspect it will help children of incarcerated parents get an education? And how important is that in the grand scheme of things as we consider some of the statistics pertaining to children of those who have been incarcerated and the cycle of poverty and crime? You could give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, and you can find us on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about Creative Corrections this hour. That is an education fund that is set up specifically to help the children of those who have been part of the correctional system, either are currently in prison or have since been released from prison. Talking about how prisoners are giving back to help one another's children achieve an education. We invite you to join the conversation this hour at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, and our Twitter handle is @JoyCardineShow. Stan, I had mentioned before the break, I'd referenced the cycle of poverty and crime, which you also wrote about in that New York Times opinion piece. Could you talk about that, and how does the cycle of crime sort of perpetuate itself?
Well, ultimately, you have a situation that in the last 30 years in particular, we embarked on a strategy of incarcerating many, many more people. Whether you agree or disagree with that strategy, one of the consequences of the strategy is that more and more people, particularly in large urban centers like Milwaukee, have sent a disproportionate number of people, particularly people of color and mostly men, to prison. That strategy ultimately leaves their families, the children that they have left behind. Most of these people come from areas of cities that are pretty blighted. They're tough economic times. Nevertheless, you know, they made a decision, and that decision was a bad decision. Most of them will agree with that. Well, they wind up in prison, they become disjointed and fragmented in terms of their families, and it's not unusual, and if you talk to prison professionals, they will tell you, to see the cousins, to see the brothers, to see the uncles, the fathers, all matriculating the sons through prison. So you may have whole families, generations of families going to prison, and it's a very, very difficult thing to break out of, a number of factors working against people as a result. Percy Pitzer's ideas make a lot of sense, given his experience as a warden for many, many years, and it makes a lot of sense from the research perspective. I bring that research perspective. He brings that practical experience to the forefront. And we try to say, how can we, pardon me, deal with this situation and break that cycle? Now, we don't have any illusions. This program is not going to end that cycle, but it can begin a discussion. It can offer a start to individuals, and it's something that no taxpayer dollars are ever involved in. It is simply donations from people who are committed to this cause, as well as the donation of the inmates who are either institutionalized or formerly institutionalized. And so there's a great opportunity here to try to pick away at that idea of poverty and crime and the cycle that happens with individual families. I just think it's a win-win for everybody involved.
Mm-hmm. What are the statistical chances that a child of a convict would enter the correctional system?
Well, it's hard to predict that. It's very, very difficult to predict that. But we do know some statistics that when we start to look at what's happening, some estimates, the American Correctional Association suggests that almost 50% of all prisoners have children who ultimately may have some kind of connection to the correctional system. and may wind up in prison or under correctional supervision, which, again, that's a broad rubric. Could include probation, could include community kinds of sentences. The point is they're involved in the criminal justice system. And if you're an African-American male, the chances are so high for you to become involved. In the city of Milwaukee, 50% of all 30 to 40-year-old African-American males have done some kind of correctional time, whether that's in jail, on probation, and or in prison. So that's a devastating statistic. And when you have that kind of background, the future employment opportunities, future educational opportunities become terribly limited. So as a result, there is a need, a big need out there to make this happen. So we don't have too few people, unfortunately. We have too many. And again, it's a consequence of the strategy that we embarked upon many years ago.
Talk specifically about the inverse relationship of education and crime. How does education actually help reduce crime?
Well, what we have is, pardon me, we know that there are a number of things that predict people's success going forward. Staying out of the criminal justice system is clearly one of them, but increasing educational opportunity. Now, crime also is a broad rubric. If we talk about traditional crime, the crime that many people are concerned about, the crime that the government tends to measure and really stay on top of, things like murder and sexual assault and robbery and burglary, these traditional types of crime, people who have higher levels of education are less likely to become involved in those activities, clearly. And in fact, we also know that with more education, your earning power over the course of a lifetime is enormously higher when compared to someone who doesn't have a college education. So there's some direct benefits to people who do this. And we try to be able to, in this program, we're trying to get people to an understanding that education does matter and that we don't have to simply put people behind bars. We can do other things with them and promote a program that clearly is self-running, self-sustaining, one that really gives people an investment in this future. And in this particular case, the inmates investing in their children.
What other environmental or social factors need to be addressed, though? You're looking specifically at education with this program, but that alone can't solve all the problems, can it?
No, it cannot. And in fact, as I said a few moments ago, we have no illusion that, you know, we're not going to solve that or break that cycle. We're going to try. We're going to help in some way. But we need stronger institutions, institutions like families, like employment, institutions like schools, social relationships. These things are the bedrock that ultimately keeps society, keep communities safe, but also keep those individuals invested in those communities. It is no secret here in the city of Milwaukee, for example, over the last 30 years, the massive loss of employment, the loss of opportunity, an educational system that is really suspect and very difficult for people, particularly in the city, the opportunities available to raise a family. The impact of that ripples across the community is enormous. The loss of tax base, the moving of people out, all sorts of things that destroy cities, going the route of like Detroit. And there are many cities lining up behind Detroit to go bankrupt in this country. And we're at a point right now where we have to think more creatively about bolstering those traditional institutions. Because we do know if those institutions are strong, communities are stronger and individuals are stronger within those communities.
Would you consider, I guess, when we talk about this Creative Corrections Foundation and the way it's set up to address education, do you think that there's a viable base for establishing similar programs to address those other needs? And how successful do you think those things would be?
Well, it's difficult to say because it depends on the type of program that you're trying to initiate and what specifically you're trying to target. Oftentimes we stay in global assertions and global outcomes, and that's too nebulous. You have to be more precise and more specific. Clearly, for example, a number of years ago, a number of states considered educational investment by state legislatures. We have a program like that here in Wisconsin. Michigan was very well known for investing very heavily in education of all students when they were very young and giving them the opportunities as they go forward. We can do that, I think, in other areas. But, you know, the biggest area is really the economy. This is not a mystery. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. if you can bolster the economy and you can get good-paying jobs, I'm not talking about jobs that don't have any benefits, that pay minimum wage. Those types of jobs are dead-end jobs in the long run. Those used to be segue jobs, transitional jobs to other kinds of employment. But we need, ultimately, longer-term steady employment. That's a large political issue that involves the politicians, but also involves the understanding of a global economy, the necessity of competition. All those things are affecting communities. But there is no doubt that big cities like the city of Milwaukee have lost a lot over many, many years. And as a result, this problem of crime is just one. Can we do it in other areas? Sure. And I think there are creative people out there thinking about these things in those areas. But it requires the involvement of a lot of people in the community to bring this and move this forward.
We're talking with Stan Stojkovic. He's dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and a board member for the Creative Corrections Education Foundation, a foundation established to raise funds to help the children of incarcerated or formerly incarcerated individuals achieve an education. We want to know your thoughts on this program. Would you contribute to something like this? Perhaps you're someone who would have benefited from something like this had it existed sooner. Let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, and you can find us on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll be back with Stan Stojkovic after this news from NPR. Good morning. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:36 on Tuesday, January 7th. We're talking about Creative Corrections, an education foundation that serves to help children whose parents are incarcerated or have been, helps them achieve a college education. What exactly is the role of education in breaking the cycle of crime and poverty? And how are inmates helping to fund the scholarship themselves? Those are some of the questions we've been exploring so far this hour with Stan Stojkovic. He's dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and a board member for the Creative Corrections Education Foundation. You can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Stan, remind me, how long has this program been around?
Actually, about 18 months. Percy Pitzer
brand new.
Yeah, it's brand new. We're right out of the gate, and like I said earlier, we're very excited going forward.
So is it too soon to speak of any success stories that you might have come across so far?
Well, we've granted thus far 41 $1,000 scholarships. The goal that I have as a researcher is to ultimately follow these people and to see how they matriculate through their college experience as well as going beyond. The college education is the first step, but do they ultimately then get careers and employment and opportunities that keep them away from crime or criminal incentives, so to speak, back on the street? So we're going to have to evaluate. We're going to have to follow these people. Like any program, we have to make sure that we're providing the correct accountability and evaluation of what's happening. So it's a little bit early right now. Most of our people are freshmen and sophomores in college who are requesting assistance through the fund. And we hope that we're going to get a lot more as we go forward, and then we can tell as we build the database going forward as well.
One of the themes that I took away from our first half of the conversation, both from the comments that you've made, but also in describing why Percy Pitzer put this thing together, is that that you don't feel that prisoners are a lost cause, that they're and you want to put the message out there that that they want to give back, that they want to support their families and their communities. Is that true? And what are you trying to do to dispel some of the myths that there are about the incarcerated individuals in our state and in our country?
Well, at the end of the day, prisoners are people too. That may seem very simple. But the fact of the matter is they have the same kinds of interests, the same kinds of desires, concerns about their family, concerns about their situation going forward. And so as a result, they are not any different than anyone else. So So they see this program as an opportunity to give back. Now, most of these prisoners don't have anything. They come to prison with virtually nothing, many of them, a vast majority of them. This is their opportunity to give back, and they see it not only in a substantive way, whether it's 25 cents, a dollar, whatever that they contribute, it's also symbolic. It represents to them, listen, I'm committed. I'm committed to trying to make a difference in a very small way, but if a lot of prisoners make that same commitment, we can have a major, major impact going forward. And so this idea that going to prison, therefore, denies you the human status doesn't make any sense in anyone's mind if you think it through. So this is just an opportunity for them, and many of them have already jumped on board, and we expect many, many more to do so. And we would like to also see that happen in Wisconsin more so than what we have right now.
Well, and you had mentioned that Percy Pitzer, the president of this board and the person who has put this program together, he was a warden for many years, and I'm sure that he's seen a lot of things and met a lot of people, and yet is, you know, this doesn't sound like much of a retirement for him, that he's working very hard. What is inspiring him to keep going?
Well, he'll tell you that if you grab one of these letters, one of these applicant letters, and you read the letter, you would be hard-pressed not to be pressed to tears or brought to tears, that the situations that these people find themselves in as young people struggling, trying to make things, you know, make ends meet, trying to make the right decisions going forward in their lives, very, very difficult. And it's hard for him to say no to someone. He's seen it on the other side. He has seen these people go to prison and their children go come to prison as well. And this is his, in his words, his small way to make this happen. And this gentleman lives on an airplane. I mean, he is going of his own money, going across the country, making this pitch. He's just started. We would love to have programs in all 50 states. In fact, we have even gotten contributions since the New York Times piece came out a few weeks ago from as far away as Australia, individuals donating to this fund. And so we are very, very concerned in terms of moving forward. We think we have a good strategy, and Percy is the salesperson. He's the individual who I think makes the pitch because he has the credibility. And I think this is very, very, very positive thing that the state of Wisconsin should continue going forward in other institutions in the state.
How has the Creative Correction Education Foundation been a resource to children besides in the way of education? Or do you aspire to be a resource beyond education scholarships?
Well, you know, one of the inmates at the Milwaukee County House of Correction asked Percy, can you help my kid? He needs money right now for just regular school. He's in middle school. And Percy's response was, you know, I can't do that. I don't have the wherewithal right now and the opportunity to do that. If we can build this fund directed on this specific purpose for college education, maybe as the fund generates more dollars, we can develop other programming, other initiatives. But at the present time, we just don't have that wherewithal, that financial wherewithal. We're calling upon, you know, the citizens of this state and of citizens of this country to take it on themselves to say, listen, you don't have to give a lot of money yourselves, but we would like you to get involved indirectly by calling your legislator, calling your institutions and saying, listen, we'd like you to consider becoming part of this program. Again, we're just beginning. This is just the beginning of this initiative, and we see it reaching out. The tentacles are very broad. So there's great opportunity, again, going forward. We just need to get the word out now, and that's part of my purpose here today is to get that word out.
And I understand that you're trying to reach out to Governor Walker as well.
Yes, we are. You know, our initial involvement here in Milwaukee County involves the Milwaukee County House of Correction. That is a county facility. That is not a state facility. That's supported by the County of Milwaukee. Well, we got the County Executive, Chris Abley. He donated, out of his personal money, $5,000 to this fund. I donated $5,000 out of my personal resources to this fund to kick it off, ultimately, in Milwaukee County. And we've gotten a number of donations elsewhere. In addition, the state of Wisconsin is a separate entity. So the Department of Corrections is a separate entity that we would love to be partnering with to going to these institutions, to making the same pitch that Percy made here in Milwaukee. I've put an overture out to Governor Walker. I've tried to contact him a few weeks ago. I'm going to give him some time to respond as an opportunity, because I think for any politician, this is a win-win opportunity, and I think it's a great program. So we hope to expand it as we go forward.
So you're hoping for state funding in some way?
No state funding. No state taxpayer support. Zero.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, what we're asking for is you give us the opportunity to come into the institution and to make the pitch, just like we did here in Milwaukee County. We want those wardens, those superintendents, those individuals that run the Department of Corrections to ultimately say, come on in and you can make a pitch. And if inmates want to give, that's great. And we'll set up the accounting, we'll set up the funding going forward. But we do not, I want to make that very clear, we do not want the state of Wisconsin to pay a penny for this. We want the inmates as well as private donations to become involved. And I should also say that what we've done at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee is we've created a parallel fund at UWM that ultimately will benefit the students who come to UWM who are in this situation and are seeking dollars. So we have that, and I want other educational institutions across the state to do the same thing, to partner with the Creative Corrections Education Foundation, again, moving forward so that we can have a more profound impact on these children's lives.
We're talking with Stan Stojkovic. He's dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, talking about the Creative Corrections Educational Foundation. We're welcoming your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, and you can tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with Stan Stojkovic, dean of the School of Social Welfare at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and a board member for the Creative Corrections Education Foundation. We welcome your contributions to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, or you can leave a comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Stan, a listener named Nancy emails, while I laud the effort, education has to be the focus before college age. The program is only helping those who have succeeded despite the deficits and attrition of K-12 in areas where crime is highest with its socioeconomic sources. Also, this is a society's problem, and we're asking the products of the system to pay for the solution, like asking the unemployed to chip in to pay for unemployment emergency funds. What do you think of that?
Well, that's a valid criticism, eventually. I think that ultimately we have tried over the years to do all sorts of things to get the states involved and to get the government involved in programming like this, and that has really not worked, largely because the prisoners are viewed as less eligible. Their offspring are viewed as less eligible. Whether that's right or wrong, that's another debatable point. But the reality is there are consequences associated with that strategy. I don't support that strategy personally, but we have to start somewhere. We have to be able to try to get involved. Percy Pitzer's program is not going to be the panacea solution. There is no such thing in this kind of problem. It's complex. Yes, I definitely support the idea that we need to support all people and give all people the opportunity to go to school, both young and old. But the fact of the matter is we're trying to start at a small strategy at a time. Let's take it one step at a time. And, when we go into these institutions, yeah, there are some people who clearly do not want to be involved in this for all sorts of reasons. And some of those reasons may be, as the caller suggests, but we also have a lot of people there who are saying, listen, I do want to be involved. We know that the state is not going to support our children. We know they're not going to support us. So we're going to have to take it upon ourselves. I think it's a great American story. But yet that criticism is a valid one, and I understand the concern expressed by the person.
And so she spoke of what she calls deficits in attrition of K-12, and you mentioned earlier that we need stronger systems throughout society, including stronger families, stronger employment and schools. But who's responsible for chipping away at some of these challenges?
Well, ultimately, it's a political strategy. You know, nobody disagrees with these stronger institutions, not a Republican, not a Democrat. Where they disagree is strategy. They disagree on the role of government. They disagree on what should be the role of government and the involvement of government. And when it comes down to taxpayers' money in particular, there is a huge disagreement about this. The fact of the matter is that prisoners are viewed as less eligible. They have been treated as a group that ultimately, you know, made decisions that sent them to prison or got them involved in the criminal justice system, and now people don't feel compelled to assist them. I think that's a foolish strategy. In the long run, it'll only make problems worse. But we have to start somewhere. We have to be able to start somewhere and say, how can we best address this issue of inmates, of prisoners, particularly the high rates of recidivism or return? Again, I don't make any illusions about this is not going to solve all the problems. But again, a start. This is a good start. And it's one that I think is politically attractive. It makes sense, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, to try this initiative and to move forward.
Let's take a call from Lewis in Eau Claire. Hi, Lewis.
Hi, how are you? Excuse me, I've got a little cold here. I'm the parent of an individual who is in prison, and I've learned quite a bit from the post-conviction, the way it works, and, you know, I think, and I laud and I applaud everything you're doing, so this is not a criticism, but I think that it's important to have reform in the front end. There are many, many people who are getting slam dunked by the system for, even my son was a first offender, and I think he's representative of a large number of people who are in prison for drug-related, non-violent offenses, and unless we can do something up front and encourage the judges and prosecutors to look at lower sentences. And I'm not saying that, you know, people have to have a free ride, but I think it's important to have lower sentences with first-time offenders and people who are nonviolent. And I'm wondering if your organization is involved in any of that. And the other thing is that, you know, statewide, every county has a different way of sentencing people. And, the positions that people take, for instance, in, let's say, Ozaukee County are very different from the positions that people will take in Milwaukee or Madison. So, again, I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on this.
Okay, Lewis, thanks.
Well, real quick, yes, I mean, I agree with a lot of the caller is suggesting. We clearly need reforms. I've been talking about these kinds of issues on the front end for many, many years. Clearly, sentencing matters, and the idea of sentencing and what happens to individuals when they're sentenced, and the appropriateness of punishment. What role does punishment play? This is a very complicated issue as you start to think it through. But we do need to have involvement in a different strategy when it comes to how we send people and how long we send them. And once we send them to prison, what happens to them? What kind of programming are they provided with? In many cases, they're provided with very little. In other cases, they have programming that is just overtaxed. They don't have enough resources to ultimately offer those programs. So I agree with the caller. This is a little bit different strategy because I think at the end of the day, you have to be more creative. And Creative Corrections Education Foundation is about that. The same strategies will give you the same results, and those have led to abysmal outcomes for people, particularly people who come from large cities like the city of Milwaukee. So I'm not disagreeing with the caller at all. We're just going to try to take this again one step at a time.
Is there a correlation between the length of a sentence and the difficulties that one's child might have trying to cope with an education and trying to stay on the straight and narrow while their parents are away at prison?
Well, there may be an intuitive appeal to that, but I don't know of any specific research that would suggest that connection. It is clear that there are so many children in this country, millions of them out there, who are, you know, lacking a parent or parents. Both parents may be incarcerated or gone, and that has a profound impact on that child's development. And so as a result. We're just trying on the back end to try to do the best we can, but we know very little about that. This research that we're trying to do ultimately by tracking and following these people is a long-term proposition, and we won't have any definitive results for many years to come. So, but you got to start somewhere, and that's where we are right now.
Another listener emailed that they have four children under age 24 who need to be encouraged. Their dad is a former inmate. This person would give $4 a month, but would like to know how.
All you have to do is go to the Creative Corrections Education Foundation.org. I know that's a long line. Creative Corrections Education Foundation.org, and you can donate. Or if you're in Milwaukee, you can donate directly to UWM, www.uwm.edu, and you go to the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare homepage, and we have a donation opportunity right there. And I have an individual that handles these donations. So we'd love to see the donations. There's no administrative cost with this. It all goes to scholarships.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground this hour, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to tell us anything else about the program or about your experience getting it off the ground or meeting the prisoners face-to-face as you appeal for donations that we haven't discussed so far this hour.
Well, I would just like to make an appeal to the state of Wisconsin, its residents, its prisoners, to really become involved. We want to come knocking on the door of the prisons. The doors of the prisons across the state of Wisconsin. But I will need Governor Walker's help to make that happen. We want to be able to get the Department of Corrections involved in a way that allows us to come forward and make a pitch. And then the inmate can freely choose to become involved or not involved. So if we can have that opportunity here in Wisconsin, and we can be at the forefront, because, again, we're starting right now, but we've got 23 prisons in the state of Texas on board. We have a number of prisons in New Mexico. Ohio is coming on board now. I would love for us to be the bellwether state moving this initiative forward and carrying it forward. I also want to say to the universities out there, get involved with Creative Corrections Education Foundation. Create a separate fund that will help your students who are attending your university who are from this background. If we can do that, we can have, I think, a profound impact on their lives and hopefully a better outcome going forward in their careers and in their lives. So that's my pitch, and I'm really excited about being part of this and going ahead and moving forward with it as time goes on.
Well, thank you so much for joining us so early in the morning to talk to us about it.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, and have a great day.
You too. That was Stan Stojkovic. He's dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He's also a board member at the Creative Corrections Education Foundation. I want to thank Robin Cherry for producing this hour and for directing it, and to Christy Taylor for on-air production. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.